The Double Neck Download has returned, two episodes in as many weeks. This is what you call momentum.
That's right. Yes. We have more momentum than we've ever had before. Yes.
Which is good, because I'm feeling a little old today, and I'm not sure if I should, so I have to check in with you on this.
All right.
You are my you're my go-to source for eternal youth. So, you know, we're very, very close in age. Our birthdays are very close together, and so
we're technically older, though.
Technically, by like 51 weeks or something like that.
Yeah. But nearly a complete year. Yes.
But here's the thing: that probably would not be most people's guess. So there's
this is. I see.
Don't agree. You almost said this is true. Don't agree, Hal.
I thought you meant just my age.
No. This is a part where go on. No. Trust me. There's everybody who's watching this is going, wait a second. That guy's younger than that guy. Yeah.
I see. Yeah. No.
Okay.
Right.
So here's the conundrum. I don't even know if it is a conundrum, but I ran to the store a little while ago.
All right.
And I'm pulling out of my garage.
As you do.
And next door are my problem neighbors. More on them in a minute. I don't think I've ever talked about them on the podcast. But, but they're big on having the transient auto detailer come over and just pull up their big unit with the water tanks and all this sort of thing. And
I go outside and my neighbor has his unit out.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Right. And they block the street and, you know, they're detailing the cars, which that in and of itself is enough of an inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
But the auto detailers have the back doors of their van open and they're treating the entire neighborhood to a concert. I couldn't identify the artist, but it was something about
much of a concert. Then I think then at that point we're just like concert in air quotes.
Yes,
I'm not. I mean, call me Occam's Razor, call me Aristotle, but I think the primary thing that you want to come away with beyond the actual singability of the music or the pleasure of the sounds itself is who's that.
Yeah. I don't know, and I would desperately hope that no listener or viewer of the Double Neck Download would know either, but my context clues were the lyric was something about tapping out hoes like a Gracie. That's what I was able to.
All right, so it's basically a guy driving around in a van, if I catch this together, streaming songs that would be from the Jamie Gum live tour. You know, the It Puts the Lotion on Its Skin tour. Right?
Yeah.
Tapping out hoes like a Gracie.
Yeah. And I cast my disapproving glance over there as I was pulling out.
Right.
And again, for context, these folks do some other things that drive me insane.
Sure. This is stacked upon stack. This is not like, oh, we're all pent up and we all need a little,
right,
you know, change of pace. And the kids today, you know, you let them do their thing.
Yes.
Right.
So there's probably a little projection here, but the guy that lives next door to me, and this has been going on for years. I've owned this house probably 7 years, something like that.
Right.
And this guy has lived next door to me for as long as I've lived here.
Okay.
And we have two car garages, two car driveways, right?
Right. And I'm guessing you have two cars that usually take up the space.
We do. They actually go in the garage. But yes.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And so over on his side, he's got a large Cadillac Escalade.
Okay.
And that up to now has been the only permanent vehicle, because the guy goes through girlfriends like I go through, I don't know what I use a lot of.
Right. Goes through girlfriends like he doesn't go through Cadillacs.
Right. Yes, because he has had the same Cadillac Escalade for as long as he's lived there, or as long as I've lived here. But here's the thing. He would have girlfriend after girlfriend after girlfriend park in front of my house.
Okay.
Now,
sure.
On his side, there is one Cadillac Escalade in a two-car driveway, and
right.
There is no car in front of his house.
I see.
Now,
yes.
I understand that this is probably technically legal, just as I'm sure I could legally probably park in front of his house if I wanted
right.
to.
You do realize you're getting older as you tell this story, right?
This is why I brought up the subject.
Right.
But to me, it's just sort of courteous. It's because...
Yeah.
Like, now understand, I'm not talking about your kids having a birthday party and grandma and grandpa are coming over and, well, where'd
yeah.
all these cars come from?
Right.
That's
sure.
fine. Yeah, not a problem. I'm talking about when you just decide that's your parking space.
Yeah.
And when you have no car, not only in front of your house, but a whole half of your driveway is
right.
open. So... And you know, at first I thought, okay, maybe.
Is it a relationship rung on the ladder for him? Like, babe, you can come over. You can have sex with me. You mm-hmm. can eat my food. But we're not to driveway space yet.
Great question. And let me tell you, if that is, well, here's the thing, though. If that is the case, and
yeah.
the reason I would probably
no,
doubt it.
That.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone attain that level. So.
Right.
So.
Well, he's holding out, right?
Yeah. So what would happen? So at first I thought, okay, this maybe it's the girlfriend that's inconsiderate for whatever reason. But I watched him trade one in for another, for another, for another, and damned if every single one of them doesn't park right in front of my house. So now I
right.
know, okay.
Maybe it would rather be your girlfriend. I'm just going to float that out there as well, which I think is very much
yeah.
A possibility.
So obviously he's telling him to do this. At one point, and this goes back years, I left a polite note on one of the girlfriend's cars, and
right.
I just said, hey, if you wouldn't mind, you know, if you could just pull up in front of your, I think I even said like your house, just, you know, if we have my mom come over or something like that, don't want her to have to walk from a few doors down, you know, if we could just
sure.
do that. And that one... That seemed to fix that problem for a little bit, but then he, yeah, then they broke up. Here came another one, and he gave her the same marching orders. Well, now the guy, he still has, you know, the girlfriend du jour, but now
yeah.
his, I'm guessing, teenage or probably more like early 20s daughter has moved in with him, and she has a car, and... Can't have that car parking in front of the house or in their two-car driveway where there's only
yeah,
one Escalade.
Can't be cock-blocked by the daughter you just met.
Yes. So
yeah.
so now they have to find two places on the street to park two cars that don't involve their own driveway. Or again,
right.
most confusingly... The space in front of their own house. I do not get this thing about there must be nothing in front of our house because
I
end up getting the view of the, you know, the Kia, the Kia Elantra with the bedazzled rhinestone license plate frame. Like, why is that my view every day?
I don't know, but that's the story turned positive for me for just 1 second because it sounds like a fabulous ride.
Oh yeah, no, it's snazzy
yeah.
and something you'd obviously want to have consistently detailed, which is why the mobile unit has pulled up outside
sure.
here. But so I thought, okay, am I old in the sense that would this have never bothered me? I think it would have. I think I would have always, not only would I would have always been bothered by this, but I think I would have been aware of not doing it myself. That's what I kind of keep coming back to.
Well, you've always been kind of a considerate dude.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So not only the parking thing, but the, let me put it this way. If that guy had come over to detail my Prius and he was blasting some Britney Fox or some Alcatraz, maybe.
All right.
I would have been more approving of his musical choice, but I still would have said to that guy, hey, can we just tone it down a little? Cause you know, the neighbors.
Yeah. I don't want to mess with my, yeah, they might be trying to, I mean, he's getting on in years, but his girlfriend isn't. So
exactly.
You know, but I don't want to,
yeah. What I would not do is I would not walk out in my driveway with that independent contractor that I had just hired blaring that music and just look around at all my neighbors and just say, suck it. Yep. Right. That's right. Hope you weren't trying to do anything that involved working from home on a Zoom call.
Right.
You know,
God forbid, which no one's doing right now. So it's not really that big of a concern, but sure. Okay. And it was also rap, was it not?
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that ended up, you could have shortened the whole story.
Probably.
This is not about age. This is about the complete lack of listenability that goes with rap music in general. I always will save a sidecar for, in terms of rap, in terms of novelty songs, meaning rap rock crossovers like Walk This Way and anything by the Fat Boys or Weird Al. So that's okay. Any spoof of rap, I'm totally down with. But rap in general, yeah, I just hate it. And it's not like that's new and a product of age. Hated it in school, too. Hated it in, like, middle school. Hated it. Still hate it. Like, and occasionally I'm like, all right, maybe if I was dancing and then I listened for a couple more minutes and I'm like, nah, no. If I was dancing, I would like, I don't know. There's just far too many N-words in this for me to actually feel comfortable dancing to it. And the suggestion of, you know, shooting someone strictly for, you know, leaning on my ride aspect of it kind of loses me as well. So, yeah, no, you're completely forgiven, whatever. And I would argue that if I was you, I would invest in some call trops.
What's that? Call what?
Call trops. Ninjas use them, but they're a little, you can make them out of nails, basically. And you just take a nail and bend it, make another nail and bend it, cut off the tips of the nail so it's just pointy. And by bending, welding them together, no matter how you throw them, there's always a nail pointing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And usually it was used to, you know, a long time ago to dissuade horses from chasing you. People on horseback were, dissuaded when you threw those over your shoulder. Nobody in sandals in Japan or on horseback would want to follow you, you know. But it works very well for the occasional stray car.
Oh, right. Got it.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah.
There's always one facing up. Yeah. That said, I'm not recommending that to anyone. I'm just saying emotionally, call trop. Be the answer.
Oh, I think I've been throwing emotional call trops my whole adult life.
Time. Yeah. Sure.
So, okay. So interesting you bring up the rap thing.
Sure.
Because I'm the same way. And I've tried to figure out over the years, what don't I like about it? Right. And I think in descending order, the first thing that is always so tough for me to get by is the sampling, because I'll hear a song with a hook that I already know and there's somebody talking over it. So I don't understand how that's somebody else's song, right? I was trying to explain this to a media colleague that liked rap, and he just wasn't understanding my position. And I said, okay, it's like this. Imagine, media colleague, that you land a big interview. Okay, you've got a big interview with a big star in your on your beat that you're covering, and you do that interview. Well, I then take your interview. I leave the big star's verbiage in there, But right. I cut you out and I drop in all my own questions.
Right.
And you would say, hey, you ripped.
And your questions don't match the answers of the star, and in some ways completely contradict them.
Yeah, exactly. And
them embarrass themselves.
Right. And then my media colleague would say, hey, you ripped off my interview. And I would just say to him, no, I just remixed it.
Yeah.
That's a remix.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think that would sit well. So the idea that that somehow just got baked in early, yeah, early on, that's going to be the basis for all this. And I understand
we just got to wave it off.
Right.
Like the price of doing business in music is at some point along the way, if they like the beat of what you're doing or the general theme of it, they can just kind of make it into whatever as long as your record label or whoever owns publishing signs off on it nowadays.
Yeah, and I understand the concept of, okay, it came from playing records on turntables and, you know, finding the hook on the record and mixing that in or whatever. But now it's just, to me, it just sort of seems like an excuse not to learn an instrument or not to...
Yeah.
Or not to not only learn an instrument, but create melodies of your own.
Right. And a lot of it, that's why producers in rap tend to be the stars of the entire production.
Yeah.
Because they know where to buy beats from people who make them and sample the song thing, you know, and then you end up, yeah. I mean, I heard, like, at the gym I go to, the girl who owns the place plays this DJ station.
No.
Yeah. And it's just DJs. Like, don't get me started on EDM. At least rap, there's, to some degree, you're thinking up your own words. They have to rhyme in your... Yeah, right. But it's... But a lot of... they literally just remix songs. That's the whole thing. Like, Pitbull owns the network, and they just play whatever hit those tracks on it. And literally, there's, Kryptonite by... is it Three Doors Down?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's the band, but yes, I know the song.
Yeah, yeah, that's that done as a dance song because they just took the vocals and threw them over a beat. And and you're like, this was disappointing when they actually made the original song. Mm-hmm. I don't like this version, chasing me around the gym. I think we both, as rock fans especially, are a little bit spoiled in that we expect. Even the punkiest of the people that we enjoy to have a rudimentary knowledge of their instruments. As a matter of fact, I would argue there's a Duff McKagan has a show on Sirius called Three Chords in the Truth.
I've listened to this a number of times. Yes.
His wife is filling in and co-hosting as they're stuck at home and all that kind of stuff. And I like Duff a lot. I think he's like, literally, and I've met Slash at a children's education fundraiser that I did in South Central. So it was really cool. And I like Slash. But Duff is the only member of Guns N' Roses that I actively like. You know what I mean? I'm like, that dude's awesome. Wherever he goes, I'll check out what he's doing. I would listen to Velvet Revolver more for Duff's involvement than anybody else's, oddly. And just a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
But his show is called Three Chords in the Truth. And it's based on this idea that a lot of people believe that the simplicity of rock is really what it's about. And so the other day, I'm in my car and I've got the Sirius rolling. And I'm on my way to run some errands. And I put on Ozzy's Boneyard, which is where it is, which is my alternate to Hair Nation. These are my two kind of, you know, I will occasionally go to 80s on 8, you know, and usually I'm disappointed after two chords and I go back because it seems to be new wave on 8, but that's another story for another time. Like the rest of the 80s didn't exist. Like Hair Nation literally is a section of 80s music that gets sequestered off in its own thing. Okay, fine. So he starts the show. It's his birthday. His wife is covering whatever in the show, Three Chords in the Truth, and let's go. And here is our first song up, and it was Electric Eye by Judas Priest. Which I like. I like the album. I liked Turbo. You know, I'm the worst nightmare of Judas Priest and Iron Maiden fans in that my favorite albums are Turbo and Somewhere in Time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's just they just hit me the right way, and I like them. Now, I like Somewhere in Time largely because it's based on Blade Runner. There's a lot of references to Blade Runner in it, and Blade Runner probably has more musical references caused by that album, by that movie, than any other movie in history, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, Put Your Hands on Me, I think it was Sinead O'Connor. That is from a line by Rachel, in the android and the replicant woman in that. And then, of course, More Human Than Human.
Yep.
White TV. Yeah, you know, which is a line directly. I mean, there's multiple lines of dialogue. Yeah. Yeah. So as I'm listening to that, he says three chords in the truth. And if you were to say three chords in the truth, I would think like AC/DC. Or a punk band, arguably, which is really what he's talking about. Is this like these ideas that it doesn't really have to be played well. It's just all you need is the, you know, you're saying your thing and it's going to be driving. But when they came up with Electric Eye right out of there, I was like, yeah, there's five chords in the verse. So, you know what I mean? Like, this is beyond three chords in the truth. Like,
yeah.
This is, I mean, you might as well be playing, you know, that's like saying, you know, three chords in the truth. We're going to start with Rush's Spirit of the Radio. Like, check, please.
Yeah.
You know, but that said, you know, that's, I didn't mind because I liked hearing the song. And I was like, there's this illusion that simplicity is just automatically the win in these situations or whatever. And quite frankly, there's a lot of really complicated rock. Mm-hmm. Extraordinarily so. And I, as a big fan of Queensryche, of course, you know, the Promised Land and Operation Mindcrime records and Rape Order, like those are incredible pieces of work and very complicated, orchestral in a lot of ways. Iron Maiden tends to be that way. Metallica, I would argue, like the Master of Puppets record, there's, you know, there's a lot of chords in those songs. So anyways, I think rap in and of itself is just like borrow this, sit, have it on a seat level, and then freestyle rap ultimately over top of it, meaning it doesn't have to rhyme or even be in time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, then you're just cranking this shit out because you have no idea what a hit is. Mm-hmm. And after that interview with Eminem where he said, they go, how do you know what a hit song is? He goes, I listen to all the songs I've tracked, and if there's any that I hate because they're absolutely stupid, I know they'll be huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I have tried to also figure out if it's like it does seem like the newer the rap is, the more it annoys me, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like if I go back far enough, like Public Enemy, for example,
sure,
I can find themes in that.
Yes.
that intrigue me because it's not this is you know, what I have, this is how many girls I'm banging and all that. And listen, understand, I understand that's a big theme in metal. Or, you know, hair metal. Or, you know,
at least in Gene Simmons songs.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to say that I'm put off just specifically by that.
And then you stand and clutch your breast. Our music drives you wild along with the rest. Bloom, 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 bloom. Crank, crank. Yes. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
So
goosebumps singing that song, so there you go.
But I think, like, I'll find pockets like that, and I'll go, okay, well, this was different. This they don't seem to have anymore. There doesn't seem to be a Public Enemy anymore. And maybe that is kind of the same way I am about music I do like, because I spend a lot of time thinking about how it's just not that way anymore. And the way it was when it was good, it's just not like that. And it needs to be that way again and all that. But there's also the element of, I've also realized that a big part of it for me is the appeal of the live show. So when I hear a band, I visualize them live, even if I've never seen them live before.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Like I immediately see people in my head. If you just play any band, even if I don't know what these people look like yet, I'm kind of forming ideas of what I think they look like, and I'm envisioning four or five people standing there playing the music. And then if I see a photo now, you know, so that's key to me, and I think when I hear rap, it's everything is just very mid-tempo, like, like everything is this. And also, there seems to be, and, you know, here I am saying I don't listen to it.
Arguably, we're in the weed years of rap as well.
Exactly. Because
we started out in the coke years.
Yeah. Because it does have a very, like, it's drag. Like, yes, it's like a slumber, like a, yeah. like
it's
a.
Exactly, it's exactly why I want to like when metal bands play with orchestras, but the orchestra always drags because yeah. nature of bowing versus picking. It's you guys know.
It's like smart. It's like a lackadaisical approach. It almost sounds to me like a lack of work ethic, you know, you know, and here I am saying I don't listen to rap, but, you know, it's kind of like saying you don't own an Eagles album. If you've ridden in some elevators, you know the tunes, you know what I mean? So some of this has just seeped into the subconscious. And, you know, when I hear,
well, you've heard the entire solo from Hotel California.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. When I hear a rap tune that's like just, you know, everything is just, it's seeing how many things we can rhyme with the word club, you know, mm-hmm. but it's just like, like, and I'm just kind of, it's like a mumble talking.
I heard one today, actually, at the gym, where the guy rhymed something with blue cheese.
So
it'd say D's, as in nuts. And I was like, the line was, I'm addicted to blue cheese. And it was straight up gangster. It was, I guess, to show how rich he was. It was a Grey Poupon moment.
Okay. I didn't know if that was a euphemism for anything.
It might be. I'm you know,
you're old.
Yes. I'm strategically unhip when it comes to modern cheese references in rap music. I really should. Pick, if you haven't seen Dis Swiss from, you know, the new, perhaps, you know, the Holy Cheese record. I don't care. And I want to care because I like dance music.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also fundamentally aware that anytime you go to a dance club and they're playing EDM or that kind of stuff or whatever, and it's just kind of like everybody's just picking a beat and sticking to it, you know, like it's a, like they're listening to hold music, and then somebody puts on a dance track from the 80s, including Jump. Everybody loses their minds and has a great time no matter what their age range. So I'm like, maybe they were on to something back then. Mm-hmm. Maybe everything is a little draggy now comparatively. And like I said, as you see weed get legalized, you see a lot more slowing down of dance music to the point where it's lethargic and a lot of acoustic records.
Mm-hmm.
Rock guys putting out acoustic records because they're smoking weed and going, I don't know, maybe just, hey. And
okay. Well, it's nice to know I'm not alone, but
no, you're not.
It worries me. Like, it makes me wonder, you know, I don't have any kids, but you see all these stories about, oh, you know, nobody buys guitars anymore. And that sort of thing. And, you know, what are they? And I'm just blown away. Like, my phone booth fighting podcast co-host Frank, you know, he has kids that are 17, 15 and 12, maybe somewhere in that neighborhood. And the music that appeals to them is just not like, it's exactly what we're talking about. It's either that style of rap or that manufactured in the studio kind of pop type thing. And how do you learn to play it? Like, you don't just get mom to buy you a guitar for your birthday and learn that stuff.
Yes. Well, by the way, we've been through this several times before.
Mm-hmm.
Right before the Appetite for Destruction came out.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 years, as you know, as hair metal was settling in, and that was the expression about it, there was a big lament that nobody was, and because of New Age synth, you know, because you had the second British wave and the rise of rap. Before that and Walk This Way became a single, there was a big thing about how nobody's going to play rock anymore. Rock is dead. Disco mm-hmm. had killed it. Remember, disco, like grunge, killed yep. rock.
Yep.
It's gone. 5 years later, you have the greatest wave of shred metal in, you know, in ever.
Yeah.
Arguably. And it added a layer of difficulty to it and that impressed the hell out of everybody. There's a lot of young blues players who are popping up now who are, you know, yeah. freaking people out because they're going so old school. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I never get down. I know everything comes around mm-hmm. style wise. You keep your t-shirts long enough, you can wear them again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something, you know, you get as you get old enough to care whether somebody parks in front of your house. Now, that said, by the way, going back to that, is that my girlfriend is younger than I am, not a tremendous amount, but a reasonable mm-hmm. amount. And she hates when people park in front of her house, and I don't give a fuck. But mm-hmm. I will say that once at one point we had a guy help me, like doing work on the neighbor's house.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a big like work truck covered in Trump flags and Trump stickers and that kind of stuff, like full on into it. Right.
Mm.
At a time when he knew not everybody's on board. This is not at the beginning where he's like, you got to give him a chance.
Yeah.
It was,
oh, he's got a statement he needs to make.
Yeah, he's a dead ender.
Yeah.
He was parked half in our driveway. My girlfriend and her son couldn't get their cars out because he was literally in our driveway.
Yeah.
Which turns it like a little bit of an L. It's tiny, but it's, yeah. it kind of curves to the street.
Right.
He was in the curved part blocking both their cars. So that's a different thing. That's one of those things where like, all right, are we being tested? Do I have to go out there? And
yeah. But okay. So you say you don't care, but would it bother you if, like my scenario, this had played out long enough where somebody is always in front of your house, but you can clearly see there's never anyone in front of their house. Never anyone. And there's a spot in their driveway open.
Right. See, I would park in their driveway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would just do that. I would just pull up, go, you're not using this space, so, I mean, the door's never open. So.
See, I do the passive-aggressive thing where, mm-hmm. I mean, well, that's maybe a little that way too, but I even go further because what I would do is if I were to be in a conversation with them about that, I would say, hey, do you guys want to just park in our driveway? Because I mean, you know, it's our house, but we're worried about your car. Like, wouldn't your car look better in my driveway than just in front of my house?
Right.
You know, like it's
right.
I like messing with people like that to the point they're like, oh, okay, you're being a dick, you know, but
no,
you're.
What you do is you move your sprinklers
mm-hmm.
To face out. Since yes. they brought somebody over to detail the car, they obviously care about, you know, water.
Good thinking. Yeah.
And you just spray it out in front of your house.
Yeah.
You park in front of your house, it wouldn't hit them.
Not great for the environment, but you know what? Some drastic times call for drastic measures. It's time to water that curb, Hal.
That's right. Yeah, it's time to water the sidewalk. We live in Vegas. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not like there's not plenty of water.
No. Straight from Hoover and solves a problem.
All right. All right.
But I'm glad we got that out of your system, though. That's good.
Yeah. I'm glad we did too.
It brought us to why we both hate rap in a lot of ways. And here's mm-hmm. the thing. I forget who, you know, they ask a lot of times on Twitter, you'll see these kind of like unpopular opinion, my unpopular opinion, that kind of
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And seems to me that a lot of people get lost. This is a long way to get to this, but it's worthwhile. A lot of people get lost in that you are stating your opinion,
mm-hmm.
not what their opinion should be.
Mm-hmm.
So for what I'll give an example is that I can't stand the talking heads, and mm-hmm. I view them as phony, you know, faux British, new wave, wannabe, art novelty rock, You know, it's mm-hmm. a novelty pop, even mm-hmm. novelty synth pop, for that matter. And I credit Weird Al's band with more talent than they have. And the fact that, you know, and the joke I always make is that, you know, I always thought they were a novelty act that wouldn't last, but here they are all these years later, still, not.
Yeah. Yeah.
They broke up because David Byrne's an egotist and he went off to make, like every other kind of synth pop artist, I'm going to go make real music where I just steal music from either South Americans or Africans. You know what I mean? I'm going to make an album with a bunch of people doing a drum circle. All right, great. Is it your drum circle? Is it your people? Are you of Scottish base? So you go back to the homeland? No, I'm just going to go down to South Africa now that it's okay. And sample a bunch of people down there. It's like revenge against rap or something, which almost gives it a quality. But that's always the definition. That's always how they end up, you know, doing it. And I just but when I say that, like somebody reacted like, I didn't realize you were a hater. And they showed they cut and paste a piece of Wikipedia about Talking Heads saying they've got, you know, they won this many Grammys. They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They were in the top 500 bands of all time and Burning Down the House is in the top 200 singles of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And my point, and I responded by going, my ears will never be outnumbered.
Yeah.
I don't get why people think.
At least not on your own head, hopefully.
That's right. I will defend anybody's right to like their own kind of music. But if you attack the kind of music I like, I'm going to push back. And I'm always going to be comfortable proselytizing about the music I like. Mm-hmm. Because then it's up to you later if you like it. But if you say you don't like it, I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about with the rap thing? Because what's strange about that is the philosophical circles that you and I travel in.
Sure.
If we tended to be more of the Toby Keith, Kid Rock, Ted Nugent variety, this opinion is actually going to be way more prevalent than some of the all-inclusive circles of toleration that we prefer. So when you say something like, yeah, I just don't dig rap, I actually found myself many times in a scenario of people, you know, going, wait, hang on now. This is the social conscious of our generation and you know, you can't dismiss that.
And, is it
so? Well, what I would argue is that there are people who that appeals to. Let me just say, there are like white suburban kids that appeals to that can't name the civil rights icons that I can or tell you anything about them or what their movements or their arrests or their protests meant. Like, I actually, and because I knew that from a very early age, I think I'm going to argue that I got it from the real source as opposed to thinking that liking that in my, you know, having that blasting out of my, my Toyota Corolla in my suburban neighborhood is somehow me being, progressive.
Which is a weird reason to listen to anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a tendency to, you know, some of the music I listen to is so aggressive that I keep my windows rolled up even when the weather's nice if I'm listening to it because it doesn't share well.
Well, that's you being considerate. Boy, you don't have much of a future as a mobile auto detailer, I'm telling you right now.
Absolutely. Me and Biff Tannen will take all of my business. I'm just starting the second coat now. So if anybody wants to like it, nothing I say will ever stop them. That's the thing about music. Music is ultimately very personal.
Yeah.
And you and I talk about the particular kind of music that we like and a lot of reasons why it always kind of dovetails back to Kiss for us is because there's not anything that could change what we like and how we feel about that music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are some, here's the thing. There are some songs and some bands that are in that genre that people who don't listen wouldn't know any better.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know the difference. But to me, it's like heretical to compare the two. You know what I mean? And yeah. I don't begrudge anybody that does like it, but I don't.
There might be something out there somewhere. And I have this philosophy about music in general. I'm always interested in the new. I'm always interested in discovering something. And so I think even though I've said everything I've said on this episode so far, there's always that thought that, well, maybe there's a rapper for me. You know, maybe there's just someone out there. And I've had moments with it, like where I remember, like my girlfriend liked this guy, Kendrick Lamar.
Sure.
And I saw him on, it was like Jimmy Kimmel or something. And he had a band with him, and the band, you know, and I was like, okay, well, here's a band that's actually playing. And it wasn't, you know, I couldn't go, hey, this is a Spinners song. Like, I remember hearing this on the radio in the 70s. So I like that. But then we saw him at this music festival, and he had people wearing instruments, but they were in shadow on the stage. And I realized, oh, these people aren't playing. You know, there's people that are posing as bass players and guitar players to make it look like there's an actual band playing here. And that was a bummer. So heartbroken once again, you know, but I don't know.
I don't mind if there's, you know, a big show on and you're doing something and the people don't play instruments in some cases, because it is impossible to do so.
Mm-hmm.
If it turns out they're dancers and they smash all the instruments because that's part of the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm talking about like where you actually have people like just don't play, wear the guitar, just don't play it. You know what I mean? Don't really play it. Just almost like the women in the Robert Palmer video.
Yeah, you know? That's right.
So,
but the fact that there were lots of them and that one of them probably could have played in there, like there could have been a Jennifer Batten in the mix someplace. And it's really just, we found a bunch of women who looked like, that's fine. I'm fine with that. If that's the stage show, I don't care. And again, if you come out there and there just simply are no instruments, but it's a big Cirque-like dance show.
Yeah.
The whole thing's the tracks, but you're not fooling anyone. That's one thing. I'm as fine with that as I am with, you know, the fact that, you know, Pink Floyd looks like a bunch of old guys who got dropped off at a bus stop with their instruments because it's just a pile of shit on stage, you know, where it, you know, I'm like, of all bands, they're one of the ones where like they put a big wall of, you know, and that was enough for them for a long time.
You know, I had a moment today just to take us back to happier times.
Sure.
I was actually doing the same thing we were talking about earlier, listening to Sirius XM in my car, and I think I was listening to the 70s channel or something like that.
Right.
And Boz Scaggs' Lido Shuffle came on. You know this tune? Lido, whoa, 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 whoa.
That's right.
So I have a vivid memory of first time I ever saw Kiss on the Dynasty Tour at Tarrant County Convention Center in Fort Worth, Texas. We're sitting there. Yes.
Right.
We're sitting there. The opening band, Leather, has concluded their set. Don't know what happened to them. But the roadies are taking off the black duvetine, you know, the draping off the Dynasty set and everything. And that song played as... It was actually right before the band came on, because you know how sometimes the sound man will do that trick where they're playing the house music, but the last track gets turned up just a little bit, just gets a little louder. And that's what that song was. And I just remember that, you know, and I'm like...
Turned in there, right.
Yeah. And it's cool when you realize little things like that, you know, because those things don't happen all the time.
I remember songs like I could never figure out. I remember in high school, like, who the hell is Aldo Nova? Like, because I'd hear the songs, but I'm like, was he in another band? Was there something else? Because all you know, one of those people that just seemed to explode onto the scene in some way, but not in a way that they deserved it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. explode onto the scene with relatively pedestrian hits.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The people who are like, oh, clearly this is radio filler. How did you end up being the radio filler? And why is it cheaper to play songs that aren't that popular? Like, it was weird. But I remember hearing one of the songs play at a live show. I think it was when I saw, I forget what band it was. It might have been when I saw DLR in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And they played it like in the, you know, between the middle act and David Lee Roth playing. And I was like, okay, this sounds good loud. It doesn't sound good any other way. It plays, it sound, and I'm like, I wonder if this would be worth seeing live, and maybe that's what I'm missing. Is he one of these people where you're like, no, I know, like, Angel Eyes is funny because, you know, Jeff Healey sings it, and he's blind. That's cool. It sounds fine. But when you see him live and the fact that he plays with his guitar sitting on his lap like a dobro, it's fucking impressive.
Yeah.
It's awesome, you know?
Did you, do you ever wonder the sound man's strategy at the big concerts? Like, because how many times have you heard Back in Black played? And I don't mean the track, I mean the album.
Album, right.
And on the one hand, I found myself waiting for a headliner to come on so many times and thought, come on. Like, I mean, it's great, but does anybody here not own this? Like, right. I've got this, you know. But then again, is there hype. Some sort of strategy to the familiarity of it?
Yes, it's hype. It's not, you know, be a way that they would kind of introduce you to bands that were similar to the band you're listening to, and you're like, this is cool. What is this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but more and more, the bands would end up picking a lot of the songs that are like, these are our influences or our contemporaries or people that we like. And like, imagine being backstage, you're about to play to 10,000 fans.
Mm-hmm.
And the DJ running the board, you know, who's just running stuff through the sound system so you don't have to go, are the speakers working before we go out? You know, plays a song by a band that where the lead singer personally, he's a prick. And, you know, you fought over a girl. And you just like, I hope I never hear that asshole's songs again. We kicked him off the last tour. He was opening for us.
Yeah.
And now he's got a single. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I like it also when there's recurring themes like Iron Maiden play, and they've done this for ever since I think the first time I saw them was on the Power Slave tour and they were doing it. But, you know, before they go on, they play Doctor Doctor by UFO every single concert. And it's cool because you've got a 5-minute warning. You know, you hear that and you're like, whoop, time to get in the seats.
Dip it up, right.
Yeah. I think that's pretty cool. Or when people, have a
theme song,
or just something, you know, intro music, something. I don't know if
Man with No Name song or whatever from Good and Bad the Ugly.
Yeah, I don't know if I've told this story or not, but I don't know. Probably better part of 10 years ago, I had just gotten a place here in Las Vegas, and Motley.
I have a good theme intro music story too.
Okay,
do this.
Motley Crue was doing their residency at the Hard Rock Hotel here, and so they were playing like a 30-night run or something like that. Really cool show. Because you've seen them in the small place, the joint there at the Hard Rock, but the concert was called An Evening in Hell with Motley Crue. And the idea was that it was more pyro, more fire. It was, everything was on fire. Everything was on fire all the time at this concert. Yeah. And I had really close seats. It was like third or fourth row. And there was so much fire.
Mick gets really cold.
Yes.
So that was this necessary. Right?
He was not getting cold at this show because on that third or fourth row that I was sitting on, there was so much fire. It was hot. Like, we were sweating from the fire, the heat, you know. It was like being too close to the barbecue. You're like, Jesus Christ. And, but when the concert started, the lights went out and a fire alarm sounded. You're hearing this,
right.
And a voice is saying, please exit the theater calmly and safely. No, this only lasted maybe 10 seconds, and then they kicked into Livewire.
Right.
But my immediate thought was, I would have loved to have been Motley Crue's manager sitting there at the planning stages of this tour with
right.
the promoter and also the insurance agent and saying, now what we're going to do is we're literally going to yell fire in a crowded theater. Now, don't worry. There's no real fire. And it's only going to last for 10 seconds. People right. really won't have time to panic before we start playing Livewire, so it'll be fine. But could you imagine? I mean, that had to be a conversation, right?
Yeah, with the fire marshal night five. And I mean, obviously, like, one of my favorite, you know, intros that when people do it is the air raid siren. And mm-hmm. the beginning of Blue Murder's album, you know, with the song Riot, if you know it,
mm-hmm.
starts with a, you know, and like, mm-hmm. and live, they would play that, you know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of bands that start with the air raid siren. I'm like, this would have not been very popular in 1942.
Mm-mm. No.
But so intro music being what it is, like I, my band uses the theme from Magnum Force,
mm-hmm.
the Dirty Harry movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we play that, and it's about 2 minutes and 15 seconds. And we put it on, like, we give it to the sound guy, and we're like, 2 minutes and 15 seconds from when we absolutely have to start playing the song. And we'll be ready when it's done, period, end of story. And don't raise the curtain, or we won't enter mm-hmm. until it's at the right part of it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just, I want a real show, like a real band, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you start building that kind of stuff. Well, I'm a big, you know, my favorite anime movie, if you have one, mine is Ghost in the Shell.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. And it's the same reason I like Blade Runner. Themes are, they overlap. It's great stuff. And I'm a big fan of the movie overall. And, you know, nude female robots, what's not to like. So, but the theme music to it is Japanese, like, female, like a female chorus of throat singers or something, just going, yeah, kind of, it's really squealy and stuff,
yeah.
but it's spooky, so it works. And it's, you know, got light drums in it going, little simple things with
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
And The Cult, for a period of time, was using that as their intro music.
Hmm.
Where they walk out on stage to it. This was, they would play that song. Well, it's 5 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it has a chorus. It's just 5 minutes of,
yeah. Right?
So they were not doing well during part of their tour. And while Billy and the rest of the band were very comfortable with being on stage on time,
mm-hmm.
Ian apparently was not interested in that concept, and for whatever reason was dragging ass, and they ended up playing that song 3 times.
Oh.
5 minutes and 47 seconds of it, 15 plus minutes, like 17 minutes overall probably.
Oh.
And the audience at one point was like ready to stay
yeah.
the storm.
By the way, I've not enjoyed the 42 seconds I've heard of it. I can
yeah.
imagine what upwards of 20
it's
minutes was like.
Brutal.
Yeah.
After 2 minutes, it's bad. Because even yeah. in the movie, they play the whole song.
Yeah.
They play it during the, you know, sections of it, and then they cut out of it. They played the whole unedited version of whatever that song is 3 fucking times, and like it was a small club. It wasn't like, oh, we're all in a stadium, so there something's up, I'm gonna go take a piss, I'll be back or whatever. It was a small club in Seattle I was seeing them in.
Yeah
And I was like, everyone was like, who do we kill first?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go with Ian. And that's what it was. The rest of the band started coming out on stage, and then it plays one more time and they walk back and then he finally starts to come out and there's a little like going on the sides, like he doesn't want to go or do it. And then he's not doing, and then he does the Cardinals in, which is not singing the songs. If you don't want to do the songs, yeah, don't put them in the set. If you can't sing the songs, don't put them in the set. But don't put them in the set and then basically do this to the audience the entire time while you go, fire woman, fire woman, fire woman.
Like, kind of doing the Vince Neil thing that he does.
Well, he's at least trying to hide the fact that he sucks.
Yeah.
In moments. Yeah. That he can't, that he's run out of conjunctions, apparently. There was a run on conjunctions, so he's not saying any of the ands.
But also, in fairness, that's always been the case with that band. Yes. Like, as far as I go back. You know, you're talking about like...
Crew or the Cult?
Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about, you know, I thought what you were going to say was after 15 some odd minutes of that, he walked out to the stage, walked up to the microphone, just went,
hey! Put it past him at that point. Like I like Billy Duffy's playing so much that I stayed for the whole set.
Yeah.
But had I not been as big a fan of Billy Duffy as I am, I would have left.
Yeah.
Early, out of aggravation.
Billy Bob Thornton's band does something cool when they come on stage. They take the intro from the 70s cop drama Canon, if you remember that. And
sure.
So it'll just play and you'll hear like Canon starring William Conrad. And then you'll hear, you know, tonight's episode, the password is murder. And but they use a different one every night. So it's always right. Like tonight's episode, you know.
Yeah.
I like that. No.
I you know, the greatest one of course is Rush.
What did they do?
The Three Stooges theme.
Oh, because, okay.
Because they're a power trio.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm inspired now by Billy Bob Thornton. I'm going to open all my shows with the theme from the Rockford Files, and I'll use a different, you know, because he always had a different answering machine message.
Yeah, that's right.
It would always go, this is Jim Rockford at the tone, leave your name and message, and I'll get back to you. Because it was a big deal to have an answering machine.
Now,
the whole point of this thing was like, oh, shit, dude's got an answering machine. And it's like new tech, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And my favorite one was... Jim, it's Larry, your accountant. You were right. Your IRS refund check bounced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they were always kicking him in. I'll just use that from now on as a fun way of doing it.
Well, I've got to go. I've got to go turn on MeTV now and just binge the Rockford Files and Canon and all those.
Dude, I literally got Peacock just because I can watch Columbo.
Oh yeah,
I have BritBox as well. Yeah. So that's the other thing. Now I was disappointed, keeping it in the rock theme as we finish out the show, that BritBox doesn't seem to be, and maybe I'm just not looking in the right place, have Top of the Pops or any of those old shows like BBC Sessions.
Yeah.
Available on BritBox. And like I said, I might need to dig a little deeper. They just don't show them because that's not where people go initially.
Yeah. With Top of the Pops, is there not some deal about how the host was like a Gary Glitter type kid diddler? Wasn't that going on?
Jimmy Savile. Jimmy Savile. Was he the host of Top of the Pops?
I think, or one of those. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Well, that would probably be it. Then I would argue, cut those, call them Best of the Pops, and play all the things without the intros.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If you can do a Ronco album, You know, the sick hits of the 70s are those kind of songs that just bring joy to you. Isn't that right, Marie? You know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking right now.
Live Books presents, yeah. Because wasn't Savile a comedian, though? Or a
I don't know. I didn't know much about him before that.
Yeah, I remember. He was supposed to be Yeah, he was creepy as shit.
All right, hey, I'm looking this up.
Television and radio raised 40 minutes. Okay, God.
I just don't want to malign the good name of Top of the Pops.
You're right. Okay. He was hosting Top of the Pops.
Found him.
Hosted BBC shows including Top of the Pops and Jim'll Fix It, which is gross.
Yeah. He's dead.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. He's a sir. I wonder if they ever retract someone's sir like they do when they kick you out of a SAG, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think so. I mean, this wasn't even, I mean, they weren't even messing with this. And wasn't, what's his name from T-Rex? Didn't he run into some problems like that?
Talk about Mark Bolan?
Yeah.
I don't think so. He died so soon. Are you thinking of someone else? There's the Gary Glitter. And then, of course, the drummer in Judas Priest. Remember that guy? Dave? Was it Dave Holland?
Yes. So, Bolan was bi. That was his big scandal at the day.
Oh,
that
okay.
You know, as far as I know. So that was la-di-da. Who cares?
Yeah.
Our dear friend Todd Kearns on the Static and Stereo record, there's a line in one of his songs, I was Bolan, you were Doris Day, like about his relationship, like how him and his girlfriend. I was Bolan, you were Doris Day. By the way, if we should give assignments for songs for people to listen to.
Yeah.
For if you haven't heard them, you know, stuff that's in the ballpark. But It's Not You, It's Me by Todd Kearns.
Yeah, okay. That's
the assignment.
All right. Let's do that.
I love that song. And then what you give one. What's a song that people need to listen to that they may or may not be familiar with from a favorite Richard Hunter song? Yeah.
Trying to think of
a relative deep track.
Yeah, maybe a good deep track. Let's go with because I'm staring at this UFO box set I got here. Let's go with Love to Love by UFO.
Love to Love by UFO.
Yeah, one of their ballads, which is not what they're typically known for. So
I'll tell you what, I don't know that one off the top of my head. I may have heard it, but I don't know my name.
Yeah.
So between now and our next one, I will listen to that and I will report back.
Yeah.
And you listen to It's Not You, It's Me.
Got it. All right. That's what we're doing next week.
I love it.
All right.
And maybe we'll invite Todd Kearns on.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can get a hold of a member of UFO. Might be past their bedtime by the time we get together, but we'll see.
That's entirely possible.
Speaking of being, they're probably exhausted from a whole day of being pissed that somebody's parked in front of their house.
Because they are older than both of us put together.
That's right.
That said, by the way, at the beginning of the show when I was waiting for the setup or whatever, I went to, I have a confession to make. I was on shopkissonline.com.
Oh,
and this is not a paid endorsement by any means or whatever, but they have a Paul Stanley talisman T-shirt now. You know the talisman from with the symbol.
Yeah,
it's like from the Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park.
Yes, yes. All right, going there now.
And they have a Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park T-shirt.
Gene Simmons wins. Going there right now.
Yep.
All right.
I like to believe all my money goes to Paul and to the Save Peter Criss from actually being the homeless guy that went on Oprah.
Yeah.
So you're awesome. Thank you so much. It's Not You, It's Me by Todd Kearns and Love to Love by UFO.
Yep. Okay. We'll do it next week when we reconvene here again. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time on the Double Neck Download.